Hello, everyone. Justin here with the Gear Priority Podcast, and I hope you're ready to get slightly nerdy. Today, we're going to be talking about canister stoves used for camping and backpacking, why they often stop working at low temperatures, and the technologies that set top-performing stoves apart from the rest. I'm here with Phil Hitch. Phil is the Director of Product Development at Cascade Designs, which is the parent company to brands like Therm-a-Rest and MSR. If you're not aware, MSR makes some of the most popular stoves on the market, like the Pocket Rocket and Whisperlite series. Phil has been with Cascade Designs for over 25 years and has been a key player in developing canister, stove, and stove fuel technologies. Phil's an engineer, and we always love having engineers on the show because they bring that extra level of nerdiness to the topic we're discussing. Anything you'd welcome, Phil, and anything you'd like to kind of add to that intro there?
No, that was great. Yeah, I started at MSR after a brief stint in the automobile industry, and like I said, I've been there for a super long time and been messing with this stuff for years. So
that's awesome. Yeah, the level of experience you have there. And I guess what was the first product you worked on when you jumped over?
The first product I worked on, MSR used to make carabiners back in the 90s. So the first product I worked on was dialing in some stuff with MSR carabiners, which was super fascinating. And then when it went over to stoves, the first stove I worked on, I think, was the Superfly stove, which we don't make anymore. And I did a bunch of work on our liquid fuel pumps too, way back in the day.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I think the liquid fuel pumps have come a long way too. So it's, yeah, cool to have some with your level of experience. And we're going to jump into some rapid fire questions just to get to know you a little bit better and just some quick answers here. What are your top two favorite outdoor activities?
So I'm an avid cyclist. So I love mountain biking and I bike commute regularly. And then I like backpacking. I really just... I don't get out as much as I wish I could. I really enjoy backpacking. So.
I think that's the case for all of us. But that's awesome. I think most of the audience is probably backpackers, but so probably some bike packers and general everyday campers in there as well. What's your go-to stove when you're out on a backpacking trip?
So lately, I've been using a reactor as my go-to stove. They're kind of fancy, and I know a lot of people don't have the access to that, but it's a super great stove. So that's been my go-to lately. And then it just depends on the trip too. Sometimes if I'm just doing something super short, I'll just take a Pocket Rocket or a Pocket Rocket Deluxe.
What do you think the coolest product made by a brand under Cascade Designs is? So anything from MSR, Therm-a-Rest, Platypus,
any of those. We make so much cool stuff.
I know.
So in the whole sleeping mattress thing, the Uberlite mattress, have you seen this thing? That's just crazy cool. This is so small and awesome. And again, the reactor stove is just a fantastic piece of kit. So.
I haven't had a chance to try the reactor stove yet, but when I was doing research for this podcast, I was looking at some of the technologies that are incorporated in that and some of the unique features of it. And I think I'm going to have to get my hands on one of those and test it out, because some of the numbers that you guys have published are pretty crazy and pretty cool. When you're out on a backpacking trip, is it toilet paper or a backcountry bidet?
No, I bring toilet paper and bury it.
Toilet paper, yeah. That's fair. I'm trying to push the backcountry bidet.
No, I've heard a lot of people talking about it, and frankly, I just haven't tried it yet. And maybe that could be the way to go.
I think on shorter trips, toilet paper is great, but I really came around to the backcountry bidet when I was hiking the Great Divide Trail for 36 days last year, and I was like,
yeah, that makes a huge difference,
that
right?
Next level of cleanliness.
Yeah, yeah, and I've certainly never done a trip that long, so
yeah, I don't think I will again. That's a long time out on trail. So a big driver for this podcast is my own experience with canister stoves kind of performing poorly at temperatures, like even above freezing, but then using other types of stoves that perform well at temperatures well before below freezing. And I've had a stove stop working like altogether at -6 degrees Celsius, 20 degrees Fahrenheit, even with the canister like having fuel in it. And I'm really excited to pick your brain on how temperature is affecting stove performance and why I've seen differences in performance between stoves that are using essentially the exact same fuel source. And I guess just a little bit more background as far as I'm curious to hear, and I think this kind of jumps into what we're going to be talking about too, is MSR's history with manufacturing stoves for backpacking, because I know MSR has a pretty long history of making stoves. It has been kind of a pioneer in the stove world.
Yeah. So when MSR started, Larry Penberthy was the guy who started MSR, and he literally started it as mountain safety research, doing research about mountain safety. There weren't even any products involved at the very beginning. He was just doing research and publishing a newsletter, right? And as he found the opportunities, it's like, oh, nobody's making this. And the, you know, my safety research says we really need product X. Then he started getting into product. And one of the big things he found, it was more for mountaineering at the beginning than backpacking, and that altitude sickness, through his research, he found altitude sickness had a big component of people being dehydrated. That's why they got altitude sickness. And that's because the stoves at the time were ill-equipped to melt a lot of snow. And when you're doing some mountaineering, that's all your water source is melting snow. So the old MSR liquid, the original MSR liquid fuel stoves were focused on being great snow melters for mountaineers. So that's how it all started.
Okay, cool. That's a neat origin story of like, it was just about melting snow and keeping people from getting sick. And that was the reason for it, to solve that kind of problem. Because I imagine before that, a lot of it was probably, do you know like what people were using kind of when it wasn't in snow conditions? I guess, because I think that was before my time.
Yeah, so there were still liquid fuel stoves, but their general construction was a burner on top of a tank of liquid fuel, and the heat feedback would pressurize the tank of liquid fuel, and that's how the fuel made it out. So there weren't any hand pumps involved. And that whole mechanism starts to fall apart when it gets really cold, because you just can't keep the heat feedback. So the big development in the MSR Model 9 stoves back in the day was having a separate mechanical pump, so you could always have fuel pressure regardless of how cold it was.
Yeah, and I've used the liquid fuel stoves, and it's phenomenal how cold you can get those down to, and still working phenomenally.
Yeah, we even make a special pump. I think we just call it the Arctic pump. We make a pump with all the seals and O-rings in it that are extra soft, because when things get cold, all that stuff gets hard for like sub-zero Fahrenheit use kind of thing. Because that still works just fine.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah, yeah, definitely. And for MSR, was with the liquid fuel stoves and like white gas kind of fuels. I guess a lot of people these days, I'd say canister stoves are probably the more popular fuel source now. So for people who are watching the video, I'm just holding up a canister right now of fuel. But it's what you can you see big piles of if you go into like an REI or Mountain Equipment Co-op or any other outdoor store. I think what a lot of people don't realize is that there's not all canisters and canister fuel is created equal. So if you will just kind of run us through, and I know MSR makes a really kind of good mix here, but run us through the different types of fuel that we see in canisters, and then we can kind of talk about the pros and cons of those as well.
Sure. There's really just three fuels that can end up in a little portable canister like that. It's butane, isobutane, which is just a variant of butane, and then propane. And you can get various mixes of those. You can't put too much propane in those small canisters because they're relatively thin steel. You can get 100% propane canisters. That's the big green ones that you see, that the green 1 pound canisters that you see on like two burner stoves and such.
Okay. Like the classic Coleman's and the classic things
right. So that's that just has propane in it, but those are super heavy and really thick because of that high pressure from propane. So you can only put a certain amount of propane mixed in with a butane or an isobutane. But that's the three fuels that you have a choice of, you know.
Okay. Yeah. And I think, a lot of people are probably familiar too with propane as far as it's like just what they're using in their barbecue
and the big white tanks
and things like that. And I know for me, propane, like I can use propane and my barbecue down to minus 30 degrees Celsius, getting down to like minus 40 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, yeah. Propane is super low temperature, but it's super high pressure. So you have to balance that with not wanting to carry around a giant steel canister, right?
Exactly. So what would be the trade-offs like as far as the different fuel types and why we see kind of like this, the little, what's the benefit of having propane added to a canister? And then is there something that's, we see isobutane in there a lot, regular butane, like N-butane, is it just like a lower quality fuel? And how do those three all play together?
It's not that it's a lower quality. It's not a lower quality. It's just the nature of the molecule kind of thing. If we can get super dorky on organic chemistry for a second. Propane is 3 carbons long and butane is 4 carbons long. So N-butane, just in a line, 1, 2, 3, 4. And isobutane, they make a T-shape. And for whatever reason, that T-shape gives it different physical properties. So the vapor, the pressure you get from evaporating fuel from isobutane is higher than it is for N-butane. So that's why we use it. MSR, before we started mixing propane in with our fuels, we just sold straight isobutane because a lot of people back in the 80s and 90s were using either just straight butane or butane with a little propane in it. And we found that straight isobutane was better than that. And then, again, it's in the late 90s, I think, that we came up with the same mix we have now, which is 80% isobutane, 20% propane, which gives you good pressure in the can. But by only having 20% propane, you don't notice so much as the propane bleeds off a little preferentially as the canister empties. So
having that different mix, it's all about trying to maximize the pressure inside the canister, and that's going to affect stove performance?
Right, because the stoves are designed to run at a certain pressure because you have the jet of fuel coming out of the stove, and that has to entrain air, and that all has to get mixed to make a flammable mixture, right? And you design the stove around the pressure that's coming out of the can. So there's a few different ways you can mix and match variables to get the pressure you want out of the can.
I think I was reading something that like the standard pressure for a canister is around like 45 PSI at like 21 degrees Fahrenheit, 7 degrees Fahrenheit, 21 degrees Celsius.
And sea level makes a difference too.
And sea level.
It's all some blood variables.
As we drop down in temperature, we're going to be seeing changes in that pressure, and then that's going to affect kind of the stove performance. I'm curious, like, what's happening inside of the fuel canister as temperatures are getting low in order to kind of change that performance of the stoves?
And there's something else we haven't talked about too that changes the stove performance, and it goes along with this about what's happening in the canister. So these canisters have liquefied propane and butane in them, right? So it's under pressure in a liquid form. And the fuel that you use when you're using your stove is in gaseous form. So there's liquids in there that are evaporating and then being released out of the canister.
Okay.
So that evaporation takes heat. So it takes some energy to turn it from a liquid into a gas. And it just gets that heat from whatever's around it. So I'm sure that you've seen your canisters get frosty on the outside as you start running your stove, right? And that's because the evaporation inside is cooling the canister itself down. So that adds another thing. It's like, not only is it cold out, but my canister's making it worse because it's cooling itself down to even lower temperatures than it is outside. And then it has to try to get any heat it can from the air. And when it's out, you know, when it's cold outside, there's just not that much heat in the air to be had. So it's a little self-defeating loop there as far as that goes. But essentially what's happening is propane and isobutane are evaporating in the canister, and then that evaporated mixture gets let out the top.
So as those fuels are evaporating, like we need them to be in gas for the most part. We'll get into kind of different stove technologies in a little bit here, but I think most people are probably familiar with just like a classic upright canister stove. So you just take like a regular stove, stick it on top of a canister, and that's how it's going to operate. In that kind of scenario, the fuel inside the canister has to be gas in order for it to operate. Is that
pretty much all fuels from the business end, when it's coming out of the jet to actually burning, it needs to be gas to burn correctly. And the canisters are nice because they just provide you with gas, whereas liquid fuel stoves, you have to go through some other routes to turn the liquid fuel into gas. The canisters just do it on their own because all that stuff is gas at room temperatures.
Okay. I came across kind of like boiling temperatures for these different fuel types, and kind of like propane having a boiling temperature of minus 40 degrees. So it doesn't matter if it's Celsius or Fahrenheit at that point. So that's what it's going to be turning from a liquid into a gas. And then isobutane was minus 12 degrees Celsius, 11 degrees Fahrenheit. So that boiling temperature factor is kind of a key component of making sure that the fuels are gas as they're coming out.
The boiling temperature can trick you a little bit though. And I've certainly had people, even other engineers, do the whole thing that like, okay, so let's say I'm at, my isobutane is going to stop boiling at minus 12. I'm at minus 15 now. So now is it just going to shoot propane out the top? And that is not even, that's not remotely the case, because liquids evaporate even if they're not boiling, right? Water evaporates all the time, even though it's not boiling. And that evaporation has some associated pressure that is varies with temperature. So it's called the vapor pressure. It's how much you get, right? And in an enclosed canister, well, one backwards. If I just had a canister of isobutane, 100% isobutane, when it gets down to the boiling point, essentially that means that the vapor pressure inside the canister equals the pressure, the air pressure outside. So no gas will come out because those things balance out. When you add some propane into it, then you have more pressure inside the canister. So let's say you're at minus 15. The isobutane that's in the canister is still evaporating in the canister. It's just not creating enough pressure to let it go. But by having the propane in there also, now I have enough pressure to let that fuel out. So the fuel that you actually let out is still a combination of propane and isobutane, even though you're below the boiling point of isobutane. So just thinking about boiling points can be a little confusing, because the mixture still works, even if it's below the boiling point of one of the constituents.
Okay, so that mixture seems like it's a pretty essential factor in order to
absolutely. Even at those low temperatures, you're still burning off more isobutane than propane, because the canister is 80% isobutane. The temperatures make it, like I said, the ratio isn't the same anymore because of the temperatures, but it's still, you know, it's still more than half isobutane being burned off.
Okay, interesting, because I definitely heard that being talked about as far as just like, okay, if you just run an upright canister stove at very cold, below the temperatures below the boiling point of isobutane, you're just gonna be boiling off all your propane off.
And that is not true, right? That's a common misconception. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a good fun fact, I think. Right there. I love busting fallacies.
Excellent.
How does that all fit into like the amount of fuel that's in the canister, and how is that affecting things?
So even at room temperature, without taking any atmospheric temperature things into consideration, the propane still burns off faster than the isobutane, because it has a higher vapor pressure, and it's called partial pressure. It's like a combination of the ratio of the fuel and its associated pressure. That's what sets how much evaporates inside the can. So when you start out with 80% isobutane, 20% propane, it's not, I don't think it's exactly linear, but like when you got a half full can, that half full might only be 10 or 12% propane now, because it burned off preferentially. And then when you get a can that's almost empty, you're going to have 99% isobutane and that 1% propane. That little 1% still helps you continue to burn the isobutane off at low temperatures, but there's not much of it, right? So the pressure drops a little bit as you empty the can. So having an almost empty can is worse. It's not the end of the world worse, but it is worse than a full can at low temperatures.
Is that why we kind of see a little, as we kind of drop down with how much fuel is in the canister, we start seeing potentially a little bit drop in performance, especially as those temperatures may start to drop?
There's that, and it's also complicated by the evaporative cooling I was talking about earlier, because when you have a full canister, you have the heat that's in all that fuel you can also use. Cooling down the fuel is something that the system can use to evaporate fuel off the top. So you have the thermal mass of all of that fuel. So now when it doesn't have very much in it, it's going to cool down even faster, because I don't have the thermal mass of the fuel to help either. So exasperates the situation.
That makes sense. So basically, cool temperatures, definitely, there's a lot of factors that seem to be
all playing against you.
Playing against you, yeah. So yeah. It's like we have the fuel type and kind of how that's going to be affecting the vapor pressure. We have the amount of fuel that's in the canister, and then we have that evapotranspiration, is that how you said?
Evaporative
cooling that's happening on the can as we're burning fuel.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. That's all great background. I think I kind of had with this entire podcast, I have enough knowledge to be dangerous and not really know what I'm talking about, but
sure.
And I think I had a general idea of that, but I think I love the detail that you got into in there with how all those factors are affecting the fuel and the performance of the stoves. I'm curious to see, because I think especially with having you on an engineering background, MSR makes a ton of awesome stoves. What different features stoves can have that'll make them operate better, work against those factors that are trying to make it less performant?
So there's two big ones. One, we have stove models where you can turn the canister upside down. So when you turn the canister upside down, you get to incredibly minimize the evaporative cooling. Partially, it's because you're using the heat of the stove to do some evaporating. But mostly, it's because when the canister's upright, you evaporate some fuel, and then you let all that fuel out, right? So you need to evaporate more fuel to keep going. With the canister upside down, the evaporated fuel is just creating enough pressure to push on the liquid fuel. And then the liquid fuel level drops really slow, right? It doesn't. So I only need to evaporate enough fuel to take up the space as my canister empties. So the evaporative cooling doesn't completely shut down, but it pretty much eliminates that from giving you the frosty canister.
Okay, that's really good to know.
Because you're running it upside down, right? And then the stove itself, the stoves that we have that you can run canisters upside down also run liquid fuel. So there's absolutely no concern about it not evaporating by the time you get down to the end of the fuel line. So,
okay. Yeah. I think I have one right here, the Whisperlay. This is my go-to. And I guess it's pretty much essential, like just from a physics standpoint, you're always going to have inverted canister have a remote. It's always going to be a remote canister at the same time, I guess.
Correct, right? I tell you, we've talked about Wiz, and they're like, how could you have something that seems like a canister stove? You have the canister upside down, and people like mounting canisters upside down with hoses and crazy stuff, but none of that's a good idea yet.
Yeah. Okay. I had no idea. I think the evaporative cooling aspect, I've never actually kind of noticed that when out in the field, but I haven't been looking for it. So it's definitely something next time that I'm out and using my Whisperlay, I'm definitely going to be kind of putting my hand on it, because you can feel it with an upright canister stove. You can feel that canister cooling off as you're cooking, and like you said, you can see the frost that kind of builds right on it. So
yeah, when it's upside down, you won't notice any of that.
Any other? Is that like the major benefit with the inverted?
So that's right. So that's the design feature we have to address evaporative cooling. Then the design feature we have to address the fact that vapor pressure just goes down as temperature goes down. And that's where we have stoves that have pressure regulators in them. The benefit of that is, I mentioned earlier that the stoves, a simple canister stove is designed to run at 35 to 45 PSI. And it's all designed around that. When we design stoves with regulators in them, we design them to run at about 15 PSI-ish.
Oh, wow. So that's like a third.
Yeah. So the whole stove's designed to run around 15 PSI. And our fuel mixture at freezing, I think, is 17 PSI.
So that'd be like the Pocket Rocket Deluxe here.
Yeah, the Pocket Rocket Deluxe. And
running
the
upright canister stove.
Yeah.
Scenario,
and the Windburner
right?
stove has, and the reactor stoves all have pressure regulators in them to essentially say that, okay, we're just going to start at 15 PSI, so it can always run that way. So then when the temperature affects the canister down to 15 PSI, you don't see any big performance hit, because that's what the stove was running at anyways.
I love the graph that you guys have on your website in one of the blogs where it shows the three. I don't know if someone drew that on a napkin or
I know which one you're talking about. I don't remember who drew that.
But it shows, for the people at home, it shows with the a line of a stove that has a regulator in it. It just kind of stays pretty level and then just drops down kind of once it hits that low PSI amount. And then you have other stoves without regulators where the performance drops off a lot more steeply. And I've seen that in real world performance when I'm out using the stoves, and it's pretty crazy how low I can get the Pocket Rocket Deluxe to operate at temperature wise. Are regulators built into like inverted canister stoves, or is that only something that really is needed on an upright canister stove?
It's primarily for upright, because it's primarily regulating the gas pressure. So you have to regulate it after it's gas.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. And I had another question for you around the Pocket Rocket and the regular. I guess, do you know, like off the top of your head, like let's say we're at sea level using like MSR fuel, what the kind of low limit temperature operation is for like the Pocket Rocket Deluxe? Like how low can a like a regulator gets you.
Right. So like I just mentioned, like down to freezing, you probably won't even notice much of a difference if you can keep your canister from going too crazy and freezing itself. And then it's one of those things, like there's no hard line that, like, if you're going to go below, you know, minus 10 C, no, don't use this. Like, it just gets worse, you know, as you get kind of colder. When you get down around like 0 Fahrenheit, what is that, like minus 18 or something? When you get down there, then you shouldn't be using canister stoves. They're just, the pressure in the canister is going to be just a couple of PSI, and that's just not going to be useful, even, you know, because that's even well below what the regulated stove was designed to work at. Yeah.
Totally. Okay, that makes sense. So that's been my experience, is around that 0 degrees Fahrenheit, minus 18 degrees Celsius with the Pocket Rocket. I've used it successfully down there, but with a full medium-sized can. And I think, as we talked about earlier, there's a lot of factors that fall into play, and all of them kind of compound each other as...
Absolutely. And you know, there's ways, I mean, if you can also, you know, there are all sorts of ways you can warm your can. If you keep your can in your jacket, that'll give you enough to cook for a little bit before it cools down, you know.
And I've seen people put cans in like a bowl of water in order to kind combat that evaporative cooling.
And again, right, that's just given a heat source for the can. And even if that water is warmer than the atmosphere, the can doesn't care that it's 32 out. The can cares how much heat it can get. So if it can come from some tepid water, then yeah, it'll work a lot better.
And are those the two kind of main technologies that we see for canister stoves, as far as like having a remote canister and then having the regulator?
And then having a pressure regulator. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And I guess around those two features, what's the, especially like the regulator, the Pocket Rocket Deluxe, what's that regulator, how's it performing at 15 PSI and performing just as well as a non-regulated stove? Like, are there components inside there that's allowing it to perform so well at that low PSI?
Well, mostly it's the fact that there's a regulator in there. And I don't know if regulators aren't super complicated how they work. It's a little diaphragm, and there's the gas pressure pushing on the diaphragm. And then there's a little spring on the other side of the diaphragm. And it kind of does that. And it only lets a little gas out, so it never builds up to full pressure. And it's really the fact that the rest of the stove was designed to run at low pressure. And then we have a mechanism to only provide low pressure.
Okay.
So the fact that everything's cooled and now I only get low pressure, I'm fine with that, you know?
Yeah. So if you designed an unregulated stove to work at 15 PSI at 45 PSI, you might be...
It would blow out. It would just blow out. It wouldn't run, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's kind of what I was trying to wrap my head around. Was it like, it has to all work together with the regulator and then the stove design in order to operate well. Any other kind of considerations with the remote canister? Like, I know, like I look at the MSR Whisperlite, and it has this like the tube here that heats up the liquid fuel as it comes out. Is that pretty much an essential? Because I do see some remote canisters without that tube. Like, what would be the difference there between the...
That tube is an absolute necessity for running liquid fuel, because it takes a lot of energy to evaporate liquid fuel. In comparison, it doesn't take much energy to evaporate fuel that already wants to evaporate in a canister. It's a bit of, like, our stoves are a bit of overkill. It wouldn't need that whole loop to still... We'd be able to make one function. So the reason you've probably seen some that can run the canister upside down and don't have a loop, that's because there's enough heat getting into the system otherwise. But the stove you have there, that's a universal stove. You can also run liquid fuel on that one, right? So really, yeah. It's just taking advantage of that fact. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. So is the... with... like if it was a, like with a pure canister stove, is that loop not necessarily necessary all the time, or does it allow the stove to work at kind of lower temperatures?
Because even on a WinPro stove, which is a canister only version of a Whisperlite, essentially, we still have the loop in it because it makes it work better, right? It's just the loop is very small if you compared it to the big fat loop that's on that that Whisperlite internationally had there. It's like the one on the... on the WinPro is just a tiny little piece of tubing, because that's really all you need. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I have another stove that's canister only. It is a much, much less thick tube that's on there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that makes sense. That's good to know for the reason why. And I'm kind of curious with the regular, because the Pocket Rocket Deluxe is usually my go-to stove, because it just works. It works well. And I'm kind of curious with when designing the Pocket Rocket Deluxe, like are there components of a regular that kind of makes a good regulator relative to other regulators that are out there? Okay, so let's jump into that right away.
Yeah, completely. So that was actually really tricky, and it's one step before that when we did the Windburner stove. We did the Windburner stove is where we where we designed that regulator, and then we just used the same regulator when we came out with the Pakuraga Deluxe, right? But the real trick there is real big regulators work great. I don't know if you've, on your barbecue, when you go and screw it in, it's got that big silver bisque next to it. Hey. That's the regulator and the things, you know, the size of a jar lid or whatever, right? Some big old thing. So those work really good because, you know, I mentioned that it's all pressure working on a diaphragm. And if the diaphragm's big, then it, you know, evens out the pressure and it's just easy to control. Well, you can't have a big old jar lid on your backpacking stove. So we needed to try to make a really small regulator. And that was the trick, being able to get a diaphragm that's super small that can fit inside there. Like if you hold up that Pakuraga Deluxe, it's like, yeah. See, there's the red part and then there's that diameter right next to it. Yeah, so the gray diameter, yep, there's a disc inside of there. That's as big as the regulator is for that. So if you can compare that to how big one is on like a barbecue, right? It's about
the size of a penny.
Yeah.
like diameter wise.
Yeah. So the product development challenge was getting that to work right and actually regulate pressure within ranges that were acceptable. Regulators are a little fussy in that the pressure you get when you're increasing the output is different than the pressure you get when you're decreasing the output. Because I said it has a spring on it. So pushing on the spring and letting go of the spring, it gives you different pressures. And you don't want them to be too different. You don't want them to be noticeably different, right? If like I said, we do around 15 PSI. It's like if it's 14 going up and 13 going down, nobody's going to notice, kind of thing. But if it was 10 and 5, we can't have that. It doesn't work right anymore. So
okay. So as far as like a quality regulator, like getting that size down is that it sounds like that's a bit of a differentiator and kind of technically difficult task. But and then are there components of that diaphragm and the spring that are working?
And it's really just making sure you have good quality components to make, you know, that part after part, all your diaphragms are the same, your spring rates are all the same. There's also a little valve in there. It's like it's all connected to a little valve that lets little amounts of gas through, and all the valve seats and everything has to be really quality machined to have all that work right.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, definitely. It's kind of crazy the size of the Pakuraga Deluxe, and then having all the technologies in it, and then large burner, high BTU. And are there trade offs? Any trade offs with having a regulator? Like, are there any downsides to having a regulator other than just having that extra component in there?
I mean, from the consumer performance standpoint, it's like no other than you have to pay for it. They're small precision components as that makes the product cost more. But as far as would it be better to just not have one? No, I don't think so. I think that regulated stoves in general just have benefits over non-regulated stoves.
Yeah, I think I've heard some people they bring up that an unregulated stove at kind of ideal conditions, they can just blast full blast if they want to and boil quicker. But I think they're getting much less efficiency at the same time. So there's trade-offs
right. That
way as well.
And I don't think that, I don't know boil time off the top of my head. It's like, I don't believe that the Pakuraga Deluxe is appreciably slower than a regular Pakuraga. So, and it's just because the rest of the stove is designed around the fact that it's at low pressure. If you have high pressure, there's more you can do with it, right? But
yeah, I think the numbers that I've seen, the Pakuraga Deluxe boils faster than the Pakuraga 2. And I'm not sure if that's
it
has higher BTU, but I haven't tested them myself, but seen some numbers.
Right. And a lot of that just has to do with how much fuel you let out, you know, and being able to mix that fuel with the air and get it all burnable. Yeah,
that makes sense. And do you think, like, other than I guess just that kind of cost trade-off, so if cost isn't a factor, it sounds like it's you're probably just better picking up a regulated stove,
right? And of course there's just like there's also just more stuff in it, so it's more complicated. So if you're the kind of backpackers like, if it's below 40, I just stay home, well then maybe you just don't even, you know, just get the simpler product, you know. So
yeah, and I think, do the regulators, do they have like a failure point at any point in time? Like, are they kind of designed to last like 20 years or 50 years? Or is it kind of like an unknown? We know it'll last a long time, but we're not sure how long
it'll last a long time. and it's certainly not, it's nothing that like oh, regulators always fail like this. It's like, no, they're pretty, well, it's extra mechanism. It's not terribly complicated. So they seem to last a while.
You don't have a pocket rocket just sitting in the factory, just running off of like
just
a fuel
all the time.
For the last three years or whatever since it came out.
It's funny, some developmental tests that we end up doing that we just stop because we're bored. It's like, it's been running for so long. Just, we're done. It's good. That's more than good a long time ago. You know? Oh, yeah.
Exactly. And that's like, I just think of like, I have a regular pocket rocket here that I used before the two.
Pocket one. Yeah.
The pocket rocket one. It's been going for like over a decade at this point.
And that thing is so stone simple. There's I don't know what could go wrong with it. You know, it's just, yeah, unless you break a leg off or something, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I was curious with the Pocket Rocket Deluxe. Just, yeah. Did you guys test, like, how would you test a diaphragm as far as just kind of its reliability and everything?
Mostly
like
it's
that?
Cycling it, because every time you turn the flame on and off, it pushes that spring on the other side of the diaphragm. So we have a little cycle tester set up that turns it in and out many thousands of times. I don't remember how many thousands, but lots, like way more than anyone would ever use it.
Yeah. Okay. So it's turning it off and on. That's the factor that's going to wear it out.
Right.
Yeah. So as long as someone's not just turning it off and on, running it isn't necessarily going to reduce its lifespan.
Right. And that's just because the flex in that diaphragm when it's just running, It's just like it's vibrating. It's barely moving. And then you turn it off, it goes, you know, so it's that big flexure from turning it on and off that's going to wear it out.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think I've definitely heard people kind of worry about the complexity of like the pocket rocket as a potential source of reason why they don't want to adopt it necessarily. But I think, I think that's just probably over worrying as far as the longevity of the stove. And I think at this point too, we've seen a lot of people use them for a long time. And
yeah, and then, like I said, in that same regulator has been in production on the wind burner stove, and that's been in that line for, I don't know, many years before we even came out with the Pocket Rocket Deluxe. So we've had a lot of good experience with that regulator.
That's awesome. Just to have a couple, I think just one more question here, and although we kind of talked about it as already, and it's kind of a depends. It sounds like it's a depends question, but as far as when people should shift from using a canister stove to like a liquid fuel stove, like white gas, sounds like it depends on the type of stove. If you have a regulated stove like the Pocket Rocket Deluxe, it's probably a little bit lower than an unregulated stove. But
absolutely. So I mean, I guess the big thing is like you can use a regulated stove like the Pocket Rocket Deluxe down to freezing, and you probably won't really notice too much performance degradation. And then as you start to get below freezing, it'll still be okay. And it's when you start to approach that zero Fahrenheit, minus 18 or 20, that the canister stoves are just going to be a bad option. And then as far as like where unregulated stoves, it's kind of just linear. It's like they're great at room temperature, and they'll get just a little bit worse as you just get a little bit colder. But, you know, they're designed to run at 35 or 40 PSI. So when you get down to freezing and it's only 17 or 15 PSI coming out of the can, that's just a noticeable reduction in output. It's not that it's unusable then, but you're going to have a lot more benefits from doing things like heating up your canister, putting it in some water, spooning hot water out of your pot onto the can.
Yeah, definitely seen people doing stuff like that. If they're both working the same pumping out similar BTUs at 70 degrees Fahrenheit, 20 degrees Celsius, then once you get down to that freezing and 15 PSI, the unregulated is just going to be drop third performance. If it's 3 minutes boil time at 20, it'll drop down to one, or if it's 1 minute boil time, it'll drop bump up to 3 minute boil time. So
exactly. And then there's the whole thing about it's just harder to boil. It takes longer to, like, all of our boil times are for not freezing cold water, you know, not water you just got out of a 40 degree stream, right? So it takes even longer.
Yeah.
Just because the water is super cold.
Yeah, glacier water.
Yeah, exactly.
What is the temperature? Because I see the boil times. Is there kind of like a standard for
Yes, I don't remember exactly the number, but it's pretty much we take room temperature water and boil it.
Okay. Cool. That's good to know.
That's what everybody does. Unfortunately, there's no real standard for boil tests, and there's kind of a lot of variables. So we try to make our boil tests, we try to control our variables in ways that are most like people are going to be using them, right?
Yeah. And well, it's awesome that you guys publish all that data and boil times and put out graphs and all the information, because it just, I think it helps everyone understand more and
completely. And stoves are complicated, so getting people as much information as they can just helps them make better decisions, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's one of those things where it's a complicated item that a lot of people probably take for granted and don't necessarily think too much about until it fails them out on trail. Yeah, and
then something's not working right.
Completely. Yeah.
You get that extra cold like fall or spring morning where you wake up and then your unregulated stove just isn't really working, or it's taking like 8 minutes to boil a cup of water. And
right.
that's when you start, I think that's when people start thinking like, okay, what's going wrong here, and what else can I use? And I think a lot of people who have been out for a long time, and even backpacking, the shoulder seasons, have probably experienced a low performing stove out there.
Certainly. Well, the first times I was out, I remember like literally just like grasping the canister because it was like freezing cold, you know, way back in the day. But when I was, you know, I didn't know a lot about how all this, I didn't know that you're like, oh, you just put in a pan of water kind of thing. But I just remember it's like you do that and you could hear the output go up just, you know, put your hands on the canister. So,
yeah, I've definitely done that too. I kind of see it getting ready to boil and then it just hits that point where it stops really putting a lot of output. You just put your hands around it and get that. The last 30 seconds before you get frostbite.
Exactly. Don't do that too long.
Exactly. Yeah, it's crazy how cold it can get. Like, have you guys ever measured the temperature of a canister? Like, how cold they can get?
You know, I don't know if we have specifically measured how cold they can get. And just with the assumptions like, oh, it's got frost on it, it must be around freezing, you know, that kind of thing. But
it feels colder than like some other items, but I guess it's all a factor of the conductive material and all these other factors.
It's because the can's metal, right? So it's, yeah, it's cool that it's sucking the heat out of your hands faster than a cold piece of plastic.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, I guess any other kind of like things you think the people out there should be knowing about canisters and like what to look, or stoves, and what, especially canister stoves, and what to look for if they're out looking to purchase a canister stove?
Well, I think the big ones are like choosing between a simple canister stove and a regulated stove. The remote stove offers a whole bunch of options that aren't just the fact that you can turn the canister upside down, right? Because you can use a wider variety of cookware, because you don't want to put big old pots on a thing sitting on top of a canister. So lots of other reasons that you might want a remote stove too. And just to think about those things before you go buy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Like I saw that MSR came out with a remote attachment, so you can turn a stove like the Pocket Rocket, the Luxor Pocket Rocket 2, into a remote stove. I kind of just discounted that because I do have a dedicated remote canister stove I use once it gets colder. But would that kind of be a solution if people are hitting those colder temperatures to just kind of eke a little bit of extra performance out of their stove? Is that the purpose of that attachment?
A little bit of it. I think that, so those aren't, the remote adapter is mostly designed so you can use cookware that isn't appropriate for something that's teetering on top of a canister, right? Because there's no heat generation loop in that thing. So you can't turn, if you turn the canister upside down, it'll end up shooting liquid fuel out of the stove and you don't want that happening.
Yeah. Okay.
That's festive.
Yeah. 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 That'll get you. Just knowing those three different components of how fuel is being affected and how that affects stove performance has been really interesting for me to learn about. And then that all kind of compounds as you work your way down into colder temperatures has just been awesome. I think I've always thought about those more in isolation as different factors that are affecting the performance. So yeah, really appreciate that explanation. And
great.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks a lot, Phil. I think we're gonna wrap this up, and really appreciate you coming on. And probably have to have you on again to nerd out on some more products.
Absolutely, yeah, this was a good time.
Thank you, and we'll be back next week, everybody, with another podcast. We'll see you then.